Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed a budget for the state of California on October 8th, 100 days into the fiscal year, ending the longest budget stalemate in the state's history. As in previous years, a major battle over the budget caused an impasse that had direct and immediate impacts on the ability of government agencies to provide services. Since California is one of three states in the nation requiring a two-thirds supermajority to pass the budget, balancing the books often turns into a bitter partisan battle, with the Republican minority holding out their voting bloc for spending cuts and business tax breaks. Proposition 25 on next week's ballot would require only a simple majority to pass the budget. According to a new LA Times USC poll, the measure has 58% support among likely voters. The state budget that was eventually signed for this year after much wrangling was subjected to the governor's line item veto. Schwarzenegger cut over $1 billion in spending from the general fund and reduced special and bond funds by well over $100 million. His cuts will eliminate the state program called CalWORKs Stage 3 Child Care, effective November 1st. The California Budget Project, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, analyzed the budget, including the governor's line item vetoes. And my guest is Gene Ross, executive director of the California Budget Project. Gene Ross, welcome to Uprising.
Thank you.
Can you tell our listeners what the trajectory of this year's budget was when it finally did come to be signed earlier this month, and how, you know, whether it's been any different from previous years under Schwarzenegger?
I think certainly longer, probably more painful. California did recently conclude our longest budget stalemate in the state's history, and it sort of sputtered to a close. And I think the difficulty reflects the fact that we have been through multiple very tough budget years. The so-called solutions are fewer and fewer the longer, the more bad years that a state has. Some of the internal borrowing, the tricks and gimmicks that people use to balance budgets have been used up in prior years, although certainly this is a budget that has some very aggressive, some would say overly optimistic assumptions. And at the end, it really was a classic get-out-of-town budget.
And what about the governor's line item veto and using that to sort of cherry-pick things to fund or not fund, which he has also done in the past? Was that employed this time too?
The governor did veto about $1 billion of spending from the budget that was sent to him by the legislature. Governor Schwarzenegger has used his veto pen with some degree of frequency. I think the most publicized, most controversial of the governor's veto was the elimination of a state funding for a child care program that provides child care assistance to families who have moved from welfare into the workforce but have very low-paid jobs and can't afford to purchase child care on their own. About 55,000 families will be affected by that veto on November 1st, so we will see an impact next week.
Wow. So what about, are there any other programs that also lost their funding that impact particularly vulnerable populations that we should be aware of?
The governor also vetoed funding for child welfare services. Those are the social workers who investigate allegations of abuse and neglect, who are there to protect vulnerable families. Also, money for drug treatment programs and money for AIDS services. And I think this is one that will have a very significant impact on those programs around California that provide services and assistance to individuals who are living with the AIDS virus.
Mm. What about the optimism, you think, that you mentioned and that lots of folks have been in the media have been describing, this overly optimistic view that has colored budget projections?
I think this is what you get because of the California's double two-thirds vote requirement, the fact that we are the only state in the country that requires a supermajority, two-thirds of our legislature, both to pass a budget and to pass any tax increase. The state had about an $18 billion shortfall, and I think numbers are hard to get your hands around. That's equivalent to total state spending on higher education and corrections. So we had to, lawmakers had to find something that at least on paper could fill a gap the size of the entire higher education and corrections budget. When they couldn't come to agreement on hard cuts or hard revenues, they adopted very optimistic assumptions, particularly with respect to the amount of money that California might receive from the federal government, which probably to the tune of $2 to $3 billion more than Congress is planning to appropriate to California. There are also some fairly aggressive estimates of savings, particularly with respect to savings that the budget makers scored from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, where they assumed a lot of savings but didn't make the policy changes, changes in sentencing laws, for example, that might be required to actually achieve those savings.
Now, there has been some news coverage recently of states like California, but also New York, that could lose more than $1 billion combined in income if the federal capital gains tax rate doesn't rise next year as scheduled, going up to 20% from 15%. Is this a concern?
California taxes capital gains just like we tax income from work, income from any source. So we're not like the federal government that has a lower tax rate for capital gains. I think that's a good thing. It shows that we value the work that people do as much as the income that investors receive. Typically what happens if investors think that there will be a tax increase on capital gains, you'll see people at the end of December, for example, rebalancing their stock portfolio. And sometimes you might see a temporary bump in revenues. It is temporary. So I think over the next several years, it really isn't something that we have to worry about. It would be a temporary gain, and our budget problems are long-term. So might have a short-term impact on the budget, won't have a long-term impact.
Now, were there any changes that were made to the California budget when it was signed on taxing businesses in California, which is often the topic of great debate in the state?
Actually, that's an area where lawmakers took actions that'll make our budget problems worse for the long term. And again, this is something we've seen in other budget agreements the last several years. There were several permanent tax cuts. That means more red ink next year. One tax cut that ironically is targeted to out-of-state businesses and actually creates an incentive for businesses who are located in California to move out of state. Clearly not good public policy. Also a $20 million plus temporary one-time tax break for one of California's wealthiest families, the Fisher family, involving a pulp mill in Northern California and a business transaction that took 2 years ago. They will get a carefully targeted tax break at a time when we did see deep cuts again in child care, in-home services programs, and in education. One of California's wealthiest families did quite well.
So, wait, one particular family was basically singled out for benefits?
It's a tax, in the way we write law, the way lawmakers write law in California, it describes a particular business transaction. That law is designed to fit the circumstances of one particular taxpayer. It's conceivable that some other businesses might also benefit from it, but certainly no other business is likely to get the $20 million plus tax savings that family will receive.
Hmm. I'm speaking with Jean Ross. She's the executive director of the California Budget Project, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that examines the budget. Let's talk about the proposition that is on next week's ballot, Prop 25, on how a budget is voted on. So far, California is one of very few states in the nation that three states that has a two-thirds requirement for voting on a California on the state budget, which has really been one reason why it's been hampered so much every year. So Prop 25, I understand, would essentially make it a simple majority, and that proposition is doing pretty well. Next year's budget process could be completely different.
It could be different. Three states currently require a supermajority to pass a budget: California, Arkansas, and Rhode Island. 12 states require a supermajority for any state tax increase, including California. And Prop 25 changes the vote on the budget, would not change the vote requirement for an increase in taxes to balance that budget. So I think we will still have very tough rules, because we will be facing, I think all of the projections show that we'll have another tough budget year, $10, $15 billion shortfall. So you can pass a budget that cuts spending or uses some of the tricks, gimmicks, and assumptions that we've seen in this year and prior years' budgets, can't get the revenues by majority vote that you would need to offset the need for some of those cuts. So it certainly will change the budget process. Proposition 25, I should say, would change the budget process. I think how it actually plays out will be something that we'll have to find out if voters approve that measure.
Mm-hmm. Currently, the one poll shows that it has 58% support among likely voters. So I'm wondering if you've had the chance to look at the budget plans for the two major party gubernatorial candidates. Jerry Brown recently released his ideas for next year's budget, and he's come under some criticism similar to this year's budget that was passed, that he is relying on overly optimistic scenarios. And I'm not sure if Meg Whitman has actually specifically released her plan too. Have you seen these?
I think both candidates, I think, have released what you might call a framework. I wouldn't call either candidate's papers a budget plan. They lack the details that you would need. And I think sort of lack really an understanding of what it takes to balance a budget after you've been through multiple very, very tough years.
But Jerry Brown is someone who's had a lot of experience being a governor several times.
He certainly has. I think when you're running for public office, it's most candidates understand that giving voters bad news isn't a great way to get elected. And unfortunately, when you look at what it will take to begin to balance California's budget, it will either take some fairly tough choices on the spending side or some fairly tough choices on the tax side or some combination of both.
And does your organization take any position on which side you think it should go?
We absolutely cannot, and that's because we are a nonprofit tax-exempt organization, and mm-hmm. we cannot endorse candidates for public office.
No, I didn't mean candidates. I meant which side the budget, which side you think the budget should fall on, tax breaks or spending cuts?
Well, we've argued for a number of years that California needs a balanced approach. We need to make smart reductions on the spending side of the ledger. We've seen, again, though, a lot of those cuts already implemented, but we also do need some additional revenues. California does face what budget wonks call a structural budget shortfall, and that's the shortfall that exists when, even if the economy were doing well, your tax system doesn't bring in enough money to pay for public services. A lot of that structural deficit results from the tax cuts that we've seen in recent years, and we think we need to have some of that money back in the budget to ensure that we provide a quality education for California's students, that we take care of the vulnerable in our society, and that we have the kind of quality of life that that brought all of us here to California, keeps us here in California, and it's necessary for a competitive economy.
Finally, Jean Ross, I understand that the budget that was passed earlier this month, the agreement essentially includes a measure that would be in the 2012 election, on the 2012 election ballot, to increase the size of the state's reserve and impose a spending cap. But these seem to be part of Schwarzenegger's pet projects that voters already rejected.
Voters have rejected the kind of limit that will go on the primary ballot in 2012 twice. The measure that was approved by the legislature is very similar to the one that the voters turned down in the form of Prop 1A back in the special election of May of 2009. It would severely limit California's ability to respond to a growing and changing economy, to provide quality education, to respond to the demands of an increasingly globalized economy. And we think that it would not be a good choice for California.
So can this be undone in next year's budget, this agreement?
There have been attempts to pull things off the ballot. We saw that with the water bond that was originally slated to go on the November 2nd ballot that the legislature decided to delay. I think the odds are that won't happen. This is something that certainly Republicans in the legislature strongly supported. Some Democrats strongly supported. It would take a two-thirds vote to move it or pull it off the ballot. So I think it is something that we'll be looking at come the March 2012 primary.
Well, Jean Ross, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And throw out your website real quick.
www.cbp is in CaliforniaBudgetProject.org, and we have information on the new budget as well as several ballot measures for your listeners.
And Jean Ross, again, is the executive director of the California Budget Project. Thanks, Jean. Again, more at cbp.org.